Good morning and welcome. This is the Angry GM, and this is the Angry GM's read aloud of his latest feature article. It is not a proofread aloud because during the proofread aloud, Angry failed to record the audio properly, and so there was no proofread aloud. The article was proofed and read aloud. You just can't hear it. I didn't record it. But now that the article has been proofed and actually published, they discovered that the audio is no good. So I'm just going to read the article out loud for those of you who enjoy proofread alouds, but don't worry, there will probably still be a lot of stumbles and screw-ups because I'm not actually good at this. And I've been told that's part of the charm by people whose taste I just don't understand. Anyway, now let's begin with the read aloud of today's article, Definitely Not the Last Word on Dice Swing. Ever hear someone say, the D20 is just too damn swingy? I sure as hell have, and obviously I talk to Dudley Do-Right a lot, because there he was. I sure as hell have. It's become a popular thing to piss and moan about it in online gaming circles. And so, weeks ago, I took a jab at the whiners in my True Game Mastery lesson about dice. I said the complaint was a load of horseshit. And now, I'm going to explain why. First, disclaimer. This is my once monthly random bullshit column. In those, I take a break from providing good, well-reasoned advice and structured arguments to instead rant about whatever I want to rant about. I don't promise anything useful, edifying, elevating, or even coherent. I'm just letting you all in my head. But the swingy D20 argument is a good thing to rant about. Sure, the complaint's crap, demonstrably and provably, but there's an issue under it that's worth talking about. A minor one, but an important one. And a fixable one. A mostly fixable one. Moreover, the swingy D20 argument also illustrates how unimportant dice and math and statistics and mechanics actually are vis-a-vis a game's fluffier, more subjective game feel aspects. And how trying to fix a feeling problem with math fixes nothing. And don't worry if you have no idea what the swingy D20 argument is. I will explain it in my usual exhaustively over-detailed, oh God, make it stop way. And I'll explain it right now. Part 1. Dice swing is bullshit. It's common for online gamers to bitch that the D20 is too swingy, and much digital ink has been wastefully spilled on the subject, especially lately. And when I say lately, I mean approximately 8 years, 9 months, and 2 weeks, give or take. Remember that oddly specific time frame. It's important later. Look, this complaint ain't a new one. Prominent game designers have been discussing the gaming bugbear that is the swingy D20 for approximately 45 years, 7 months. Never mind, the timing ain't important this time. Just know this argument's been around for a while. But it's always been a sort of academic sideline thing. In the last almost decade, though, the complaint's gone mainstream. Really mainstream. What's the complaint? Well, it's a math thing. Specifically, a probability and statistics thing, which is the very best kind of math thing. But this is also the very worst kind of complaint to discuss with gaming nerds. Well, let me lay it out for you. Swinginess defined. The problem is everyone's favorite icosahedral plastic math rock, the 20-sided die. When you test an in-game action by rolling a d20, every number on the die is equally likely to show up. There's a 5% chance you'll roll a 3, a 5% chance you'll get a 10, a 5% chance you'll get a 17, and so on. So, if you roll 100 checks in a game session, you'd expect to roll 5 ones, 5 twos, 5 threes, 5 fours, and so on down the line to 5 twenties. That ain't really how probability works, but it's close enough and easy to grok, so that's how I'm explaining it. Because every result's equally as likely as every other on a d20, gamers incorrectly call this a linear probability distribution. That ain't correct either, but but that's the term gamers use, so I'll keep using it, rather than point out that it would be more correct to call it a uniform probability distribution and to throw the word discrete in there for good measure. And I'm only including this paragraph so all the armchair mathematicians know I could get this shit more right than they can and back off any admitted inaccuracies I include for the sake of conceptual understanding. So the D20 yields a linear probability curve. If you graphed the odds of each outcome, it'd look like this, which is a beautiful hand-drawn scrawl in pencil that I did myself and took me about 10 minutes and was therefore much harder than just having any dice spit out a really easy graph. But nonetheless, I suggest you go over to the actual post of this article and look at the beautiful graph I scribbled. But to understand how that makes the D20 swingy, we've got to talk about another way to roll them bones. Rolling dice normally. Some tabletop role-playing games heretically eschew the ideal perfection of the greatest of the Platonic solids, and instead ask you to roll fistfuls of dice to determine your in-game outcomes. And right now, I'm speaking specifically of games that ask you to roll multiple dice, add the results together, and compare the total to some target number. That includes games like GURPS, Fate, Fantasy Age, and all those Powered by the Apocalypse games, but it does not include games like Blades in the Dark and Shadowrun, because you don't sum your dice rolls in those games. The probability rules are totally different. In GURPS and Fantasy Age, for EG, you roll 3d6 and sum them whenever you try to do a thing. And the probability laws change completely when you do that. The lowest and highest results, 3 and 18 respectively, are each less than 0.5% likely to come up. Meanwhile, the middlemost results, 10 and 11, are each more than 12% likely. The reason for this weirdness is down to the fact that there's only one combination of three numbers between 1 and 6 that'll give you an 18. You need to roll all sixes. But to get a 10, you can roll 1, 3, and 6, or you can roll 2, 4, and 4, or you can roll 1, 4, and 5, or look, I ain't running through the 27 different combinations of D6 results that'll get you to a 10. Trust me, there are 27 ways, okay? The point is, if you rolled 100 checks in a session of GURPS, you'd expect a full quarter of those rolls to yield a 10 or 11, and you might not see a single 3 or 18 at all. Again, that ain't technically correct, but it's conceptually correct, so it's good enough for us. Graph the probabilities, and you get a thing that looks like this beautiful hand-drawn graph again that you can go to the post and see for yourself if you're listening to the recording. And gamers call that a bell curve, or normal distribution, whereas actual math wonks wouldn't even graph the results like that because, again, dice generate discrete results, blah blah blah, math is hard. The swinginess is in the shadows. The swingy D20 argument states that, because you're as likely to roll extreme results like 1s and 20s as you are to roll middlesome results like 10s and 11s whenever you roll a d20, the d20 is just too damned random to use for anything as vitally important as the outcomes in pretend elf games. Extreme results should be rare. Middling results should be common. Most gamers can't explain this shit coherently, though. Instead, they draw the graphs and then say, "See? Don't you see?" And that's because most gamers are just repeating crap they read online. The thing is, randomness isn't inherently bad, or variability, or swinginess. Let's just call it swinginess. That's what everyone calls it. So what really is the problem? Well, the folks who do write coherently on the subject, including DM David's excellent analysis of the topic, which I have linked to, outline the issues more clearly. And generally, the issue comes down to the likelihood of experts failing and the likelihood of incompetence succeeding. Imagine, for instance, a very perceptive elf rogue with a very high spot hidden things modifier. Using a d20, that character's player is equally likely to roll a 3 as a 15, and thus they might get robbed of their success by a crappy die roll. If they were rolling 3d6, on the other hand, the odds of a 4 or 5 robbing them of their rightful success is far, far lower. Likewise, when the obliviously dunderheaded barbarian looks over the elf's shoulder with his crappy-ass spot-hidden things, he's equally likely to roll a 17 as a 7, and he might thus end up with a totally undeserved success by amazing luck. And if he succeeds where the elf failed, a holy immersion-breaking crime against pretend elf gamingdom occurs. Yep, this is all down to noodle-armed wizards smashing down doors the barbarian only managed to loosen, just in a different skin. There is, however, a slightly different and technically more correct way to look at the problem. Consider again that elf. Let's say her modifier is so high, she can only fail on the lowest possible roll on the die. In D&D, she's got a plus 10 and she's rolling against a DC 12. In Fantasy Age, a 3d6 system, she's got the same plus 10, but she's rolling against a target number 14. In the end, the elf will fail 5% of the time in D&D. In Fantasy Age, she'll fail only once in 200 tries. You can make the same argument backward for the oblivious barbarian and his odds of success if he needs the highest possible roll. The problem is, both of those arguments are totally wrong. The math is right, the model is wrong. The shit I said above about the laws of probability, the same shit everyone else is saying, that's all technically and mathematically correct, except for the parts that I admitted were inaccurate for the purposes of clear conciseness and the incorrect terminology I used because it's the same terminology everyone else is using. But there's a big, important fact that everyone's ignoring. The probabilities in the systems I've been talking about, D&D and Pathfinder and GURPS and Fantasy Age and Fate and all the Powered by the Apocalypse games, aren't governed by linear probability distributions or bell curves or any of that shit. The correct term for all these games is binomial probability distribution. In D&D, actions don't have 20 outcomes. They have 2. They either work or they don't. The same is true of GURPS. The same is true of Fantasy Age and Apocalypse World and Fudge. Yes, you can indeed fail, succeed, or crit in D&D, and in Powered by the Apocalypse games, you can fail, sort of fail, and And in Powered by the... Damn it! First mistake! I was doing so good! I was almost worthy of the title One Take Angry there! Like, this is beautiful! If I don't actually try to proofread this stuff while I read it aloud, I get a pretty good presentation, don't I? I should be a podcaster. Anywho, in D&D, actions don't have 20 outcomes. They have 2. They either work or they don't. The same is true of GURPS. The same is true of Fantasy Age and Apocalypse World and Fudge. Yes, you can indeed fail, succeed, or crit in D&D. And in Powered by the Apocalypse games, you can fail, sort of succeed, and really succeed. And in Fantasy Age, you can fail, succeed, and succeed with a stunt. But those odd extra outcomes are just success and failure with an extra little twist. Consider this. In D&D, a first-level character specced for archery who fires an arrow at a basic foe is 70% likely to hit, assuming the average numbers in the core rules. An arrow fired by a starting archer in GURPS is 75% likely to find its mark. And a Dungeon World archer has an 83% chance to at least graze his target. If you're rolling dice and comparing the result to a target number to generate a mostly binary result, it doesn't matter what you roll on the die at all. It doesn't matter in D&D whether you rolled a 7 and hit or whether you rolled a 17 and hit. What matters is that you hit. And in GURPS, a 5 that succeeds, GURPS is a pain-in-the-ass roll-under system, a 5 that succeeds is no better than a 10 that succeeds. I could replace the die in math with percentile rolls, and you'd never know the difference. And the odds, by the way, they ain't a function of the dice you're using. They're just down to where the designers set the modifiers and target numbers. Just by changing the target number tables or the attribute modifiers, I could bring all three systems' odds in line. And if I hid the percentile dice from the players and made all the rolls myself in secret, they'd never know they were playing a different game. Let me make this abundantly clear. If the actual number on the die doesn't matter, only whether it's higher or lower than some target, the die you roll is almost, but not quite entirely, irrelevant. Why almost? Because of extreme circumstances. When a character tries something that is almost impossible to do, or to fail to do, swingier dice are more likely to produce surprising results. The eagle-eyed elf who can only fail on the worst result, she's got a 5% chance of failure in D&D, but only a 0.5% chance to fail in GURPS. But the flaw in that point is that extreme circumstances are pretty friggin' rare. Tabletop role-playing games aren't designed to even present them. When did you last have someone roll a check in D&D they could only fail on a 1, or could only succeed on a 20? Because I sure as hell can't remember ever asking for a roll like that. This is a spherical chicken in a vacuum issue, one that screaming internet math nerds bring up in online forums, but not one that happens at actual tables. And that is why I said the swingy D20 argument is a load of horseshit. Shit. And if this was a podcast, I guess it is a podcast. It's just not hosted anywhere other than my own site. But I would need an explicit tag now, huh? Shit. And that is why I said the swingy D20 argument is a load of horseshit. It's a technically mathematically correct analysis of dice probabilities that has literally nothing to do with tabletop role-playing games. And also this, what just happened there, is why this isn't an actual podcast. Because however good I am, there are going to be like one or two little flubs or stumbles in everything I do. And I do not have the wherewithal to go back and find that shit and cut it out and then, you know, like, you know, rejigger the audio and all that shit. I don't want to do that. That's the only reason you get proofread alouds is because it's the one way I can record just whatever comes out of my mouth 40 minutes and just hand that crap to you as is with no quality control. Because I got, you know, it takes me enough time to write this shit that I also don't need an extra hour of editing time on the end of everything. Even though actually, I probably would do really well as podcasts rather than, I guess I am doing well as podcasts. But anyway, blah, 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 that, whatever. Part two. But there is a problem. Actually, another reason why this isn't a podcast, just to throw it out, is because I do distract myself and would suddenly just start yammering away about things like why this isn't a podcast or making fun of myself every time I flub. Then again, that would be good fodder for the outtakes, wouldn't it? Like I could have a supplemental outtake thing in addition to the supplemental Q&A thing in addition to the podcast thing, and then I can quit this whole blogging game because who the hell writes blogs in 2023? But Angry does, that's who. Anyway, part two. But there is a problem. As I said above, the D20's swinginess has been a thing in the game design space since the 1970s. Hell, Gygax himself addressed it in sidebars in early D&D editions and Dragon magazine columns, and Steve Jackson based his early fantasy game designs around it. Their analyses, though, were more nuanced, more even-handed, and showed a much better grasp of the underlying statistical principles. I'm not claiming to be smarter than Gygax and Jackson and Cook, though I'm also not saying I'm not. What's weird, though, is that this complaint's gone mainstream in the last several years. I say a lot that people are good at knowing when they're unhappy and bad at knowing why. When you've suddenly got lots of people pissing and moaning about the same thing, there's probably something upsetting people. And when people are upset about something, they start flailing around for explanations and solutions. And the swingy D20 is the perfect example of a solution looking for a problem, or a diagnosis looking for a symptom. If you ain't a math wonk and you read a bunch of crap about how the D20 is more likely to produce extreme results And if you've got this deep-seated dissatisfaction with dice rolling outcomes in your favorite tabletop role-playing game, you're going to take the former as a plausible explanation for the latter. And much hay was made over the swingy D20 about the time D&D 5e was in open public playtest, thanks to Monty Cook splitting off from Wizards of the Coast over creative differences and publishing his own game, Numa Numa, and then making a big deal about the swinginess issue in his design blog. Me, I think there is something underlying the swingy D20 folderol. I think people are dissatisfied with something. I know it ain't the probabilities, though. That said, I want to be absolutely clear about just how big and important I think this shit actually is. I just realized I'm actually going to make a correction right now. Because it's comedic time. Okay, I am actually updating the website article right now to change the name of one heading for comedic purposes, just because it just occurred to me, blah, blah, blah. So, okay. So I guess this did become a proofread aloud. Okay, I'm not a liar now. Okay. Me? I think there is something underlying the swingy D20 folderol. I think people are dissatisfied with something. I know it ain't about the probabilities, though. That said, I want to be absolutely clear about just how big and important I think this shit actually is. This shit ain't important. From here on, I'm assuming some number of gamers are unhappy, and it's got something to do with rolling dice. But how many people are unhappy, and how unhappy are they? I don't know. No one does. But I'm betting it's somewhere between very few and almost no one. The two most popular tabletop role-playing games in the Western world are powered by the D20 system. And I'm not dumb enough to claim, like many of my spiteful contemporaries, that D&D is only popular because it's popular or because people are stupid or whatever. That's an idiotic statement to make. People don't invest heavily in things they don't enjoy. Which means the problem is neither widespread nor game-breaking. The problem here is that issues like this quickly turn into self-fulfilling prophecies. When you start telling people that the D20 is swingy and makes their characters fail too much, people start to notice their failures more. And people are already much more failure-focused than success-focused. They notice their failures. In other words, if you read some rando blogger's dumbass screed about the swingy D20 and then have a slightly unlucky game session, you become convinced that the D20 is ruining everything! So the problem, ow, I hit my hand on the desk as I was animatedly over-emoting that the D20 is ruining everything. Maybe this should be a video instead of a podcast because I'm like a friggin' Muppet here. When I said flailing before, I literally flailed my arms Kermit style, okay? But anyways, maybe this should just become a video cast because, like, it's 2023. What idiot is doing audio podcasts anyway when YouTube is a thing? Angry is, that's who. That was a callback, too. Anyway, well, at least I'm entertaining the hell out of myself. This is a disaster. This could have been such a good read, too. So the problem, whatever it is, isn't a common, widespread, or game-breaking problem. It's a little niggle, a minor annoyance. It bugs some, but not most. But what is it? Diagnosing the problem. How do you diagnose a condition when you've got a male patient saying, I have a mysterious and indescribable pain somewhere in the lower half of my body, and I suspect it's primary ovarian insufficiency? Well, if you're smart, you totally ignore the patient's diagnosis on the basis that men don't have ovaries. That idiotic and wholly incorrect diagnosis is the equivalent of gamers blaming their woes on wholly incorrect understandings of gaming probability. Then, you try to isolate the problem. You try to figure out where the pain actually is, and when it happens, and where it isn't, and when it doesn't happen, and all that crap. crap. Where is the pain? In this case, the pain is very specific to the Dungeons & Dragons community. Even the over-analytical power gaming math wonks, I say with affection, of the Pathfinder community don't complain about the swingy D20 much. Moreover, while there's always been chatter about the swingy D20 in the D&D space, it used to be an academic side issue that was occasionally spackled over with variant 2D10 or 3D6 rules that never caught on. The point is, the pain's pretty specific to D&D 5e gamers. When does the pain happen? Well, I spent a torturous few days reading blogs and Reddit threads, watching YouTube videos, and poring through comment and forum feeds, and I noticed some common points of contention. People talking about it talk very specifically about failing die rolls they don't think they should have. Often, the complaint is phrased as experts who fail too often or fail routine tasks. Occasionally, there's some additional whining about non-experts outperforming experts. When does the pain not happen? Well, the pain doesn't happen a lot. If it did, everyone would be quitting D&D 5e. Or, at the very least, the pissing and moaning and ranting and whining would be a lot louder. Loud enough, by the way, that the designers' current surveys and playtests would show it. Remember, they're doing extensive surveys and playtests right now, and given how they do what I will laughingly call their data analysis, which is an idiotic story for another time, if everyone hated the D20, we'd know it. What does all of that suggest? A lot, actually. But it's all to do with emergent subjective game feel bullshit. Let's get this straight. Game mechanics don't make games good or bad. It's the dynamical interaction between the players and the mechanics, as well as the complex interactions between the game mechanics, that lead to a game feeling good or bad or fun or unsatisfying or whatever. It's never just one mechanic, which is why you can't fix unhappiness through math alone, and why you can't even blame unhappiness on math. The dissatisfaction with the D20 is absolutely not coming from some law of probability. It's coming from a bunch of different game mechanics rubbing a certain small subset of players the wrong way. And that's for several reasons. Nobody likes failing. Let's start simple and stupid obvious. People hate failing. Failing makes people sad. People only yell about the D20's swinginess when they fail die rolls. And of course they're unhappy and prone to yell then. They just fail the die roll. Moreover, some people cope with failure better than others. Some folks are good sports and some are whiny crybabies. And this problem is limited to a small subset of gamers. Maybe it's the gamers who just aren't good sports. But I can't dismiss this wholly as people who can't suck up their losses. First, because you aren't any more or less likely to miss a roll in D&D 5e than in any other tabletop role-playing game system. If the problem really was just about crybabies crying, it wouldn't be more common in the D&D 5e community than anywhere else. And while I could argue, convincingly I might add, that the D&D 5e community has a larger prevalence of whining crybaby bad sports, I still don't think that's the whole issue. And that's because most of the complaints point very specifically to experts failing when they ought not to. The curse of bounded accuracy. When the brain trust at Wizards of the Coast designed the latest iteration of D&D, they tried very hard to fix many complaints about previous editions. One such complaint about the extremely popular third edition of the game was that the numbers were just too damned high. Difficulty in armor classes often reached into the 30s and 40s, even at middling levels of play, and skill and attack modifiers went deep into the double digits. It was too much.
So WotC's designers introduced the concept of bounded accuracy. Their goal was to keep DCs and ACs from reaching much beyond 20 and keep D20 modifiers mostly in the single digits. And while I can prove mathematically that this choice contributes to the D20's perceived swinginess, I don't have to. I just have to tell you what people really didn't like about 3E. The number bloat had a bunch of nasty side effects, you see. If you wanted your character to succeed at anything beyond the lowest levels of play, you had to make that character an expert. You had to tweak your skills to keep your modifiers up. Playing a jack of all trades was right out. Non-experts couldn't succeed at most tasks. Meanwhile, the expert character's expertise completely invalidated the randomness in the game. Most routine tasks were trivial for experts. They couldn't fail. Bounded accuracy was introduced to D&D 5e to counteract the so-called expertise problem. It decreased the distinction between experts, who couldn't fail, and non-experts, who couldn't succeed, to allow for more balanced challenges in which everyone could participate with more reasonable chances for success and failure. I don't think it's crazy to suggest that bounded accuracy might be contributing to the perception that the D20 is too swingy by letting experts fail and non-experts succeed, considering that's exactly what the designers said it was supposed to do. So, why hasn't the scroll bar hit the bottom of the page? Why are there still 1,500 words waiting below? Isn't that the whole answer? No, you dumbass. Didn't I just tell you it's never one thing? The skill-based skin suit. Dungeons & Dragons is not a skill-based system, and it doesn't claim to be, but it wears a skill-based skin suit, and that really screws with people's brains. Understand that it takes more than just a skill-based core mechanic to make a game skill-based. There's a design philosophy and a way of building challenges. Skill-based games feature teams of experts with disparate, esoteric skills who usually split up to handle different parts of complex tasks, or else tag each other in and out to deal with particular problems. So the face gets a forged invitation to the charity gala. Meanwhile, the hacker is in a hotel room across the street waiting for the infiltrator to install a tap in an on-site junction box to give him access to the security system. Meanwhile, the strike team is waiting for the security cameras to shut off so they can take out the guards. That's skill-based gameplay in a nutshell. Dungeons & Dragons is a game of heroic fantasy adventure. It isn't designed for skill-based play. Off the bat, you're told never to split the party. Each character's supposed to participate equally in D&D's three major modes of gameplay: combat, exploration, and social interaction. You've got to get your whole party through every obstacle and encounter. Everyone's got to cross the river or climb the cliff. There are some esoteric skills, but they mostly provide options. Lockpicking ain't the only way to get through a locked door, it's just the quietest. And D&D is pretty loose about demanding you have the right skill for the job. Anyone can make a navigation check or forage for food, for example. But D&D's got a skill system, and it seems to encourage you to build a party of specialized experts with all the skills covered. Moreover, whatever the rules say, challenges are presented in terms of skills. The presentation is so strong, game masters feel they must fit every action to a skill rather than call for an ability check. And most players view their skill lists as the levers with which they interact with the world. Modern gamers also expect skill-based gameplay. Our world is one of hyper-specialization. Everyone's an expert in something, and our world is highly complex. If you're not an expert at a task, you're useless at it. Put this crap alongside the bounded accuracy thing, and you end up with a schizophrenic mess of a game. One that's both about and not about hyper-specialized experts. And I think it's this weird discontinuity that makes 5e especially prone to complaints about swinginess. It's not just that D&D 5e was purpose-built to decrease the impact of expertise, it's also that D&D presents itself as a game about specialized experts. But I also don't think that's everything. Rolling too many dice. Throughout the entire history of role-playing games, there's always been a problem with game masters and players using dice to resolve things they shouldn't. Every core rulebook for every tabletop role-playing game system ever designed includes at least a paragraph begging game masters not to overuse the dice. But I think the culture around D&D 5e is especially prone to overusing dice. In the online D&D space, it's deeply unpopular to rely too heavily on the game master's authority and good judgment. And D&D 5e's design conceits and presentation downplay the importance of game masterial judgment. But without that judgment, the dice become the only way to resolve questions of success. Game masters don't feel right declaring an action a success or an impossibility, and players balk at such declarations without a die roll preceding them. At most tables, it's the players' jobs, not the game masters, to call for die rolls. "I'll roll persuasion," says the player, "to see if the guard lets us in." Then the player tosses the die. The GM's input is just not needed until the player announces their result. In ages past, the game master's judgment prevented failures at routine tasks and stopped incompetence from succeeding because no game master worth his screen would ask a player to roll to resolve a routine task or an impossibility. And speaking of the game master's judgment, the action check crapshoot. While I do think D&D's mismatched, non-skill-based but still skill-based presentation and design are the biggest factors leaving players pissed off at the poor D20, I don't think it's the biggest problem affecting people's games. And I know there's nothing most gamers can do about that mismatch anyway. In the end, I think what's leading to the dissatisfaction over the D20 mechanic has a lot to do with a sense of injustice or unfairness. After all, when people complain about this shit, they complain about failing roles they shouldn't. They complain about not succeeding when success is deserved. They're complaining about fairness. And I think most Dungeons & Dragons 5e game masters run totally unfair games. Weren't expecting that, were you? I'm just full of surprises. But hear me out, this is important. When your players come to a locked door or a stubborn guard or a wilderness to navigate or whatever, the D&D system provides a simple means to handle that, right? A character with the right skill steps forward and rolls a skill check, and if they get a good result, the problem's solved. Easy, right? But let me ask you a question. What can your players do to affect the outcome? Module writers and homebrewer game masters tend to assign specific skills to specific challenges. Very occasionally, there's a multiple choice list of skills of the if the characters try to pick the lock, do this, and if they try to break down the door, do that variety. But for the most part, game masters and module writers decide in advance which skills can overcome which obstacles. The player's odds are determined wholly by the game mechanics. The module writer or game master sets a DC based on objective criteria described in the core rulebooks. The character's modifiers are determined before the game even starts. They're determined during character generation or when leveling up. Some characters do have resources they can spend to enhance certain checks once in a while, but they're rare and limited in most cases. The point is, when players come to a locked door or stubborn guard, they don't have any say in how things play out. They must use lockpicking or persuasion. The DC is set, and their modifier was determined during character generation. Whether they realize it consciously or not, the players don't feel like they've got any say in the outcome. The only thing a player can do to improve their odds of success is to build the best damned character they can. Winning is about going in with the best modifier. And that's all it's about. So when you go in with the right skill for the job and the highest possible modifier you could squeeze out, and the dice hand you a failure, there's literally nothing you could have done differently. Worse, there's nothing you can do differently next time. Nothing to learn. Months ago, I pointed out that the advantage mechanic is a very nice, very streamlined mechanic that totally robbed every game master of the chance to hand their players a pile of circumstantial bonuses for their cunning plans and crazy capers. And when I sat for an interview on the Red Caps podcast, I explained that situational modifiers are the game master's primary means of empowering the players to affect the outcomes of their actions. Dungeons & Dragons 5e doesn't give the game master any tools to reward the player's approach to the game's challenges. Gone are the days of players saying, "Wait, those metal bars in the corner, can I use one as a pry bar?" Players don't seek those sorts of situational advantages, and game masters don't reward them. I think this is also why the D20's swinginess isn't a more widespread complaint. In theory, D&D 5e's schizophrenic design and skill system skin suit should lead to an epidemic of swinginess complaints. But there are a lot of good game masters out there who encourage and reward clever play and empower their players, and as such, those players never get that initial feeling of unjust lack of control that leads them to read long-ass ranty screeds about dice probabilities. And if you take nothing else from this long-ass ranty screed, that's the lesson to carry away. Part 3. Fixing the issue. Over the past few months, and especially in the days since I announced I was weighing in on this topic, there's been chatter on my supporter Discord server about fixing D&D's action resolution to mitigate the D20's swinginess. Or it's perceived an apparent swinginess. And since I mentioned the issue in passing months ago, I've gotten a lot of emails proposing solutions. Here's my advice. Don't waste your time on this shit. Switching dice and rebalancing modifiers won't help. And I think changing to a 3d6 or 2d10 system will have a nasty side effect given the way modifiers interact with bell curves. See, modifiers in bell curve systems have a diminishing impact when the odds of success are already high or low. And that's precisely when, from a game design perspective, you want modifiers to count the most. You want strong modifiers that let players even the odds when they're at a disadvantage. Or that let monsters even the odds when the player's victories seem a foregone conclusion. Moreover, the last thing you want to do is make heroic fantasy adventure more skill-based. Bell curves, such as they are, work best in skill-based systems about hyper-specialized experts and tag-in, tag-out eigen-challenges. Meanwhile, some folks have recognized that a lot can be solved if the Game Master just calls for fewer die rolls, which is precisely why I advised you all not to let players roll dice if their character shouldn't succeed or shouldn't fail. That said, the mathematical systems some of you sent me for determining when dice shouldn't be used are pretty wrong-headed. Just use your friggin' judgment. No need to do any math at all. And no, you absolutely shouldn't let your players decide whether to roll or use a passive score when success is guaranteed. When success is nearly guaranteed. Now I am editing. This did become a proofread aloud. Okay. And no, you absolutely shouldn't let your players decide whether to roll or use a passive score when success is nearly guaranteed. Players shouldn't be able to... Blah, blah, blah. Players should be able to affect the outcome with clever in-world actions, but it's the Game Master's job to choose the rules used to resolve them. Wow, that was a terrible read. I switched to proofread aloud mode, and now I can't read aloud anymore. That's so funny. There's like a brain switch. Okay. And no. You absolutely shouldn't let your players decide whether to roll or use a passive score when success is nearly guaranteed. Players should be able to affect the outcome with clever in-world actions, but it's the game master's job to choose the rules used to resolve them. Honestly, I think the best thing any game master or player can do if they feel the D20 is too swingy is to just forget they ever read anything about it. It's such a small issue. It's very prone to confirmation bias, and it's a feature in D&D. Not a bug. It's how D&D is supposed to work. But you game masters should think long and hard about what your players can do at your table to affect the outcomes of their roles. What choices can they make in the moment, not during character generation, to change their odds? How do you empower them to tip the scales in their favor? How do you encourage them? How do you reward them when they do? And when a character fails a check, what can the player do differently next time? What can they learn? That said, I know this ain't the last word on the swingy D20. Switching dice systems and arguing about math is easy. Fixing the broken-ass way you run games is hard, and no one likes hard solutions. And that is the end of the proofread or the read aloud or the proofread aloud that became a read aloud that became a proofread aloud or whatever. Anyway, I'm done. There'll be another proofread aloud again soon. Hasta lasagna.